He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Appropriate, a fake band, Spinal Tap, singing about springtime, fake season. It's never happening. I've been visiting Grandma down in the hospital in Florida. Thank you for your condolences and all the rest. She's hanging in there, 95 years old, God bless her. But I'm back here, we're live. Tell you how I feel about BB's landslide election. A lot of things I really want to talk about today. Black man, what's that about? Being hung from a tree in Mississippi. Did he hang it himself? He's a convicted murderer out on parole. Black kid getting bashed by cops outside that Virginia bar. But I want to start with that cop full of, car full of cops, rather, involved in that fatal crash in Staten Island. What's that about now?
Yeah, so West Shore Expressway, about 5 o'clock this morning, a sedan full with four people in the car, three of them off-duty Linden police officers, go head-on, going the wrong way onto the West Shore Expressway.
So what do you know? Were they drinking? I mean, it sounds like they were out partying, coming home early. I don't know.
The Gowanus, of course, if we were looking at the trail of where the roadways go and where it might take them, it would take them to the Gowanus potentially and then back to Linden, which is near the Gowanus. But the
so coming home from the city?
Yeah, so coming home from the city.
But driving the wrong way on the West Shore Expressway.
Exactly. So it wasn't long. They weren't on the West Shore Expressway long, going the wrong way. They smashed head on into a tractor trailer. One person we know, a Linden cop was killed. Another person was killed. We don't know who that is. The two people who were in the back seat, initially they were in critical condition, but now they've been upgraded to serious condition. The person who was driving the truck, this innocent driver, tweeted at the scene, is going to be okay.
He's going to be all right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll continue to update you. Is the West Shore Expressway still closed?
I mean, no, it's not. Remarkably, it's actually already open, and this was just 5 o'clock this morning.
Wow, okay. All right, well, our best to people involved. Hopefully, the casualties, the dead, will stop at 2, but I'm sure there'll be an internal investigation into why the cops were all gathered and going the wrong way on the highway. The Linden Police Department must be traumatized.
If you look at the pictures of the sedan that they were driving in, it's amazing that anybody survived. I mean, there is nothing left of this car. I mean, the entire top of the car is shaved off. So the fact that the two people in the back are going to be okay is really remarkable.
All right, so we'll continue to monitor that. I have to tell you how I feel about Bibi Netanyahu's election. I know that a lot of you were having a lot of fun yesterday, and I want to thank the judge who was on the program on Tuesday, I guess, Judge Napolitano. And I want to thank Larry was on yesterday. Were you on?
Yeah,
you were here.
I was.
So a lot of people were concerned about how long it would take President Obama to send a congratulatory note or telephone call to Bibi Netanyahu. He finally did it after 2 days. I have to tell you, if it were me, if I was President Obama, I would have sent Bibi a postcard, a printed postcard, maybe a Hallmark card by snail mail. So furious would I be were I President Obama with Bibi Netanyahu and the way he campaigned. And, you know, it's funny. I was in Florida and I, with my in-laws, my Jewish relatives, very firm supporters of Israel, members of Federation and ADL and all the rest. Every one of them, including my mother-in-law, was shocked when Bibi Netanyahu said that he does not believe in a two-state solution. I had been telling them that for years. I've known Bibi since the early 70s. He said to my face in 2002 that he does not believe in a Palestinian state. He doesn't think that two states can live side by side in peace. He was bragging to me at that time in 2002 in my suite in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem that, you know, during his first term as prime minister, all he gave the Palestinians was a casino in the city of Jericho. And he laughed at that. They don't even have the casino anymore. He was doing such big business. It became a security risk to the Israelis driving into the West Bank to go and gamble in Jericho. So they have nothing. And, ladies and gentlemen, I got to ask you, how long can one people occupy another people's territory and deny them essential rights like a passport? They can't leave. They can't, they can't go from town to town. If there's Israeli checkpoints, they've got to go through. It's a miserable existence, and it has exacerbated the situation in the Middle East. In 2009, Bibi shocked everybody when he said in a speech that he was in favor of the two-state solution. I didn't believe it when he said it. And nothing that happened since 2009 indicates any desire on Bibi's part to further the creation of a Palestinian state. And then during the election campaign, when he said that he does not believe and there'd never be a two-state situation as long as he was prime minister, and then called on right-wing Israelis, particularly ultra-religious Israelis, to get to the polls in a hurry because there were droves of Arabs voting. I mean, imagine if an American president said, get to the ballot box right now. There's droves of blacks voting. There's droves of Jews voting. Get to the ballot box right now. There's droves of Latinos voting. How would you feel about that guy? How would you feel about it? And you cut him slack. Why? Because nobody could say anything bad about Israel because you're immediately condemned, as I have already been for my appearance this morning on Fox and Friends, as anti-Semitic. Here is, Randolph Stowe of Norfolk, Virginia. I, of course, have known for years that you are a fool, Geraldo, and a blowhard. Every intelligent person knows that. What I didn't know until this morning is the fact that you are a virulent anti-Semite. This guy's calling me an anti-Semite. Don't you dare. If you're calling me right now at 866, don't you dare. And if you're in front of me and you call me, I would smack you. I would smack you. You're not an anti-Semite to criticize Bibi Netanyahu, who is a thug politician. It's a thug neighborhood. I grant you that. Everybody knows it's a thug neighborhood in the Middle East. Bibi Netanyahu is a thug politician. And you're proud of him? You're proud of him saying that, get to the ballot box now because these droves of Arabs are going to vote? Droves? In the droves, it's the same kind of language they use against the Latinos coming over the border. Just picture the droves. It's racial. It's racist. It's humiliating. And you're wondering why? Here, Josh Earnest. You have this bite crash play. Here's Josh Earnest. Here's the White House press secretary.
The first step will be for the prime minister to, I think, clarify, both in his own mind probably, but also with the other members of the government that he is will soon be working to form, about what their policy is going to be.
All right, that's a pretty lame soundbite there. 19 times in yesterday's press conference, Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary, said the United States has got to reassess its policy vis-a-vis the United States and Israel. That's what Bibi accomplished. He managed to split the Congress of the United States, split the government of the United States in terms of how it relates to Israel. That's what he accomplished. He got himself elected by, in many ways, undermining the support in the United States for Israel. And what's going to happen when the United Nations brings up the resolution of whether or not there should be the creation of an independent Palestinian state? What's the United States going to do? Is it going to veto the resolution the way it's always has, which has prevented it from becoming the law of the international community? Or will the United States next time abstain? This is, and now Speaker John Boehner. Speaker John Boehner is traveling to Israel later this month during the congressional recess. So you have John Boehner going triumphantly to Israel to receive the kind of greeting and welcome normally reserved for a head of state. So you have the Speaker of the House of Representatives, one of the most partisan people representing less than half the American people. He's going to receive the hero's welcome now in Israel, John Boehner. And that's supposed to help Israel. And to point that out, I become an anti-Semite. That's the extent of your critical thinking. I'm sure you're going to bring up the Holocaust or the pogroms in Tsarist Russia. It is so frustrating to me. You know, it takes zero courage in this country to be in favor of Bibi Netanyahu. Zero courage. There's no downside. There's plenty of downside if you criticize him or criticize the politics that he represents or that John Boehner represents. But I'm going to tell you how I feel about it. And I want you to, before I go to commercial, think about how you would feel. Whatever age you are, just put in your skin right now the Palestinian person who lives in Ramallah or Bethlehem or Jericho. And number one, you're seeing over the next valley in the land that was supposed to be Palestine. You see, 350,000 settlers now, increasing every day. Every day they're taking the Palestinian land, and Jewish settlers from America are settling in the occupied West Bank. How would you feel if you were that Palestinian man watching that and hearing Bibi Netanyahu saying last Tuesday, this Tuesday, that there'll never be a Palestinian state, never be a country? You've been occupied since 1967. And it's you, it's whoever you are listening right now. Shalom, James, John, James, Josh, Joe, all these people calling me right now.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
26 minutes after 10 o'clock. So what'd you think about what I said? You know, I know how my remarks grate, particularly on people who are Jewish, because this is not a discussion that happened just this week. This is something we live with. It is part of our family dialogue. You with family members in Israel, me with family mishpucha in every one of these big time Jewish organizations. This is something that, and to the extent it's inside baseball, I apologize to our Christian, Muslim, Hindu, and Buddhist listeners now, but this is geopolitics. This is bigger than Israel. This concerns the United States standing in the Middle East. It concerns what I believe to be the single most irritating factor in terms of ever regularizing the Middle East. I think it played some role in the creation of the Sunni Muslim extremist movement, now characterized or labeled ISIS. You cannot deny that the occupation and Jerusalem and all the rest of it has been something that's been around my entire adult life, the entire lives of many of the people listening. But when I say these things, I know you must cringe internally, and I don't want Noam Laden to put words in your mouth, but you tell me.
I don't cringe at all, actually. We're probably right on the same page. When I watched that video of Benjamin Netanyahu the night before the election talking about how the Arabs are coming out in droves, you need to get to the polls and vote so your vote outdoes their vote, I felt the same way you did. I would be like an American politician saying, hey, the African Americans are coming out to vote. We have to cancel out their vote. We got to get more people out there. I was outraged by that. And I think what hits me is that people who support Israel who are not Jewish, I don't think a lot of times realize that there's a difference of opinion in the Jewish community and how they view Israel. We're all Zionists, or most of us are Zionists.
But we're I certainly am.
But we're not on the same page politically. A lot of us never liked Bibi Netanyahu, don't like him today. That could be half of the Jewish population. I don't know. I haven't polled. But I think non-Jews don't understand that you can still support Israel in a huge way and not like Bibi Netanyahu.
Because it is scary to be critical of Israel in this day and age with the political correctness that is, it's like taking on the Dolce and Gabbana saying that they don't like, in vitro families. And now Elton John is boycotting. You can't go against the gay mafia. You can't go against, it's like, there's like an Israeli mafia, a thought police. You can't have another. How dare you have that opinion? How dare you have a different vision? And it is interesting to me to note that where did Bibi Netanyahu get the last second surge to win. He didn't get it from liberals suddenly converting to Beebe's point of view. He got it from the far right, the splinter parties, the really radical types. And that's where he got his strength. And now I'm telling you, this is what exists. And I promise, folks, I'm going to get to your calls. His vision, Beebe's vision, is an Israel that exists from the Mediterranean coastline to the Jordan River. When I was with him, he used to always talk about Judea and Samaria, the biblical communities that were in the territory now deemed the West Bank of the Jordan River, Palestinian territory. It is a messianic view of Zion, of Israel, that is extremely uncomfortable to me because it was always the fringe point of view. But now I see it, there is a kind of a resignation or an acceptance among the conservative faction in the United States and in Israel and among Jews, whether they express it or not. What was surprising about Beebe saying he doesn't care, he doesn't want a two-state solution, is that he said it. That was the only surprising thing, is he actually verbalized it. That messianic view that the Palestinians will never have a country, they'll gradually see their lands accumulated or taken over by Jewish settlers, and eventually they'll kind of disappear into history. And it'll be a Jewish, you know, it won't be a two-state solution. It'll be a one mega state. It's like when Moshe Dayan in 1973 said of the, or 1967 rather, he looked at the map that included Sinai Peninsula and the Golan and all the West Bank. And he said, I like the map. You know, ultimately they yielded Sinai back to Egypt. And I don't want to be inside baseball with history lessons here, but I think that it is important to note that the radical right is now the establishment in Israel. And you got to have to deal with that.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. 38 minutes after 10 o'clock. The Dow is up big time. It's over 174. Dow up 174, so I'm glad that it recovered from yesterday. I'm going to get to your calls, I promise. We'll spend an hour on your calls after this important report from Port Gibson in Mississippi. I mentioned at the top of the program, very concerning, giving all the racial tension that has existed recently in the land, to hear that a black man has been found hanging from a tree in Mississippi yesterday. Ed Lavandera, the excellent CNN correspondent, has been covering the story. He joins us from Port Gibson, Mississippi now. So, Ed, thanks a lot for being on board. What do they know? Is this a murder or is this a suicide?
Well, that's the question, Geraldo, that they have at this point. They're not able to answer is whether or not Otis Byrd, a 54-year-old man who lives here in the town of Port Gibson, Mississippi, he was last seen on March 2nd. On March 8th, his family officially reported him missing. And then yesterday, there was a team of fish and wildlife searchers that went into the wooded area behind the home where he lived here. And about 500 yards deep into this wooded area, he was found hanging from a tree with a bedsheet. I just spoke with the sheriff here in Port Gibson, who said that Otis Byrd was fully dressed, had work boots on. His hands were not tied together. And he said and told me, Geraldo, that as soon as he saw the scene and that there was a black man hanging from this tree, that they called out the FBI immediately, just given, obviously, the history of lynching in the South. And because of all of that, the sheriff wanted everyone and called in as many resources as he could immediately because of that. But at this point, they still don't know if this was a murder or if it was a suicide.
Ed Lavandera, the CNN correspondent, covering the hanging of 54-year-old Otis Byrd in Mississippi. But I note, Ed, that you say very specifically that his hands were not tied. Now, this guy, he was a convicted murderer. He spent a bunch of time, a hard time, behind bars for killing somebody. He got out, I guess, on parole. His hands, again, not tied. So was there anything, have you heard, Ed Lavandera, that might have caused him to take his own life at this time?
you know, that's I think part of the mystery as well that investigators are trying to figure out as well. So he commits a murder back in 1980 here in Claiborne County. He was paroled in 2006. The sheriff tells me that he has seen and known Otis Byrd, that he has always complied with his parole requirements, meeting and with the parole officer and everything. There's never been any issues in the last almost 10 years since he's been out on parole. The other interesting note I thought the sheriff shared with us as well is that at the scene where he was found hanged, that there were no chairs, there was no stump, and the sheriff said that if Otis Byrd wanted to commit suicide, he would have had to climb up into that tree himself and jump down, that there was nothing around the scene there that would have helped him get into that tree to commit suicide.
I gotcha. That's very, very distressing. But Ed, if you hear anything, I'd love for you to give us a ring, and I appreciate the report. Thank you very much. Ed Levendera, CNN's correspondent on the scene, Fort Gibson, Mississippi. I don't like that last part. I mean, that he didn't have a ladder that he could have kicked out. I guess he could have crawled off the branch and then let himself down. It seems awkward. But on the other hand, I don't ever remember seeing a picture of a man lynched where his hands were free.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a dilemma, a mystery. We'll figure it out. Okay, back to what I was saying. Let me restate it. Let me make you mad all over again. One sec, excuse me. At some point, America's Jews will be forced to admit that we are backing a government whose policy is the creeping annexation of somebody else's property. And I come back to this point. Imagine what you would do, what I would do, what we would do if the roles were reversed and it was Palestinians accumulating Jewish land. This occupation has lasted since 1967. Why? Is it because Palestinians are too radical? How radical would we be if we were them? And I really believe that this is the bottom line, and this is where people get mad at me. History will remember how intelligent, thoughtful, sophisticated Jewish scholars justified this land grab because of sins wrought by Russian pogroms during the Tsar and Nazi Germany, the atrocities of World War II. That's how we justify what's going on right now in the Middle East. I think it is shameful. I think it fuels the rage of Muslims, and it will haunt us as a race until the end of time. That's how I feel. And I know most of you disagree with me. It's like my position on immigration. I'm all by myself out there. I get that. But, you know, I've earned the right to be there. Frank in New York, you're the first caller, and I'm sorry that I've taken so long to get to you. Please accept my apologies. And now you're on 866 Geraldo. What's on your mind?
Okay, Geraldo, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm pretty good. I mean, I'm concerned about my mom and everything, but generally speaking, I'm pretty good.
God bless. Well, my main comment is really on the Palestinians that, first of all, I was 23 years old when I left Lebanon back in 1978. Okay, so you know
I
what
was in Lebanon in 1978. That was the Litani in troubles, and I was there in 78. But what's up?
Yeah. Okay. So what I'm saying is really for you to say that the Palestinians are poor people and hopeless, and they can't go here and there. They should have their own state. And whatever, I mean, once they establish their own state, that is the beginning of the end of Israel. You know, the Muslims don't strike you when they are weak. They only strike when they are strong. They are not stupid. That's exactly what happened in Lebanon, Ronaldo. I was right there. And over 75,000 Muslims, they were sacrificed and they were killed, especially in the Damur that was near north border of Israel. And you heard this woman, Lebanese, when she was 13 years old, and she told the whole story. Her name is Bridget Gabriel. You know her probably.
I don't know off the top of my head, but what's the point?
Okay, well, the point is, amigo, first of all, the Muslims, and generally speaking, 80% of the Muslims population are radicals. I tell you who are radicals and how you know them. Anyone that goes to the mosque and pray, that means they know the Quran 100%. Anyone who prays is a radical. All the Muslims around the world, look at the Saudi Arabia.
Okay, Frank, I'm going to leave you there. Anyone who prays in a mosque is a radical. I mean, what's the chances of that person and somebody who prays in a mosque ever? I mean, is he right that anyone who knows the Quran is by definition a radical because of some of the language in the Quran? What about some of the language in the Old Testament? Didn't Noah have 600 wives or something? Something like that, right? James, squeeze you in. What's up?
Good morning, Geraldo. How are you?
I'm all right.
First of all, I don't think
thanks for asking.
Semite by any means.
Well, thank God for that.
Okay. But I do think you have a short memory. Okay. As far as the politics are concerned, if you remember when Obama was running against Mitt Romney, Obama had to come up with a plan, and the plan was, you know what? The Dream Act. That solidified the Spanish vote for Obama.
I think you're okay. Right in terms of vote getting. Right. Obama went to the left on immigration just before the election brilliantly,
right.
And he manipulated the Latino electorate. He motivated
exactly.
them, and he got some votes. You're right about that.
As far as Bibi Netanyahu is concerned, he did the same thing Obama did. It's dirty politics. That's the meaning of politics.
Well, I think there's a little bit of a difference between cutting slack to some children who were immigrants.
I know you do, because you love Obama. But what I'm saying is, I think Israel should finally say, you know what?
I wonder if I love Obama. How could I love Obama? He never gave me an interview. I swear to God, he went to the MTV people before he came to me.
But we don't need, Israel should say, we don't need America to defend ourselves.
Israel needs America
to tell us what
you're
to do.
You're going
to
see how they scramble now. I got to go, James, but I appreciate the call. Very loving, smart call. I like it. Spike, hey, Spike, what's up?
Geraldo, I'm against this occupation with Israel. I'm against Netanyahu. In addition to that, the settlements have to stop, and Jewish people have to be sensitive because they have suffered throughout the years. And to use the Holocaust and the pogroms and everything that happened in the past, to use that and to go over somebody else in terms of occupation, I think is very wrong.
All right, Spike, I appreciate that. You know, I don't know how you're going to reverse that. What are you going to do now with the settlements, for instance? What do you do with the settlements now? What do you do with 350,000? I think it's more than that now. I may be wrong about that. I'll check the
It's some huge stats. Number.
It's a huge number.
Yeah.
And it's growing. It's still growing. There's no freeze on the settlements, anything like that. So every day there's another, you know, there are more people moving in, more Jewish people, most from the United States, moving into the occupied territories. I lament it. And when I see how Republicans have put all of their political capital on the Netanyahu point of view, and I see it with my colleagues, At Fox, I understand how it wasn't that Bibi won. It was that Obama lost. And it was so great to see Obama lose. And I try to say, it's not about Obama. It's about Israel. It's about the future of Israel. Is Israel going to be an embattled city state forever? A garrison state forever? Is that?
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Okay, welcome back. Just got a couple of minutes here, but we got a call from Pennsylvania, where I am very keen on getting a weather report. Dave's on the line. So, Dave, I know you didn't call to give me the weather. What's it doing out your window?
It's snowing, and there's about an inch of snow on the ground.
Oh, I lost him. I don't know what happened.
We'll
never know. What happened, Crash? Did he, okay. Here's John in New York. What's up, John?
Hi, Geraldo. You know, I admire you, sir, but I don't understand you. Now, you got to put yourself in Netanyahu's place. If you were dealing with people who were bent on your destruction, would you empower them by granting them statehood? I mean, the Palestinians have never indicated a willingness to reach reasonable agreements with Israel.
What's your solution, John? You want to keep them prisoners forever?
Well, I don't know, but you certainly don't want to give them power to destroy you. They don't want you.
A demilitarized state? Isn't that what Netanyahu is talking about? What would be different? That they would have passports? That they would have the freedom to move from, take their babies home from the hospital?
I just think that it's... Are geopolitically speaking goodwill players? I don't.
I think that it's not for Israel to say whether they should be a country.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 11 o'clock. It hasn't started snowing quite yet, but it is, where did he say? Eastern Pennsylvania now. So that's getting pretty close to Jersey line, the Delaware River, and then from Jersey. When are we expecting it?
We should really any moment. I mean, it was supposed to be late morning, so we're already at late morning.
I'm supposed to fly out at 4 o'clock. I wonder what my chances are.
Well, that's when it's supposed to be at its worst, so that doesn't look too good.
Isn't that something? You know, Eric and I, interestingly, we don't talk a lot about municipal issues, but the whole thing about Mayor de Blasio being late to everything, I had a somewhat similar problem, and she, in her wisdom, my wife, said it's because you're late because you don't really want to go to these various events.
Huh.
And she's right. I mean, it is whether subconscious or you're just reluctant. And she says, honey, look, we got to leave in 15 minutes. So you haven't showered yet. It's because you don't. And I think that that's what it is with Bill de Blasio. I think that even though he's a lifelong politician and has never really had a real job, you know, other than being an elected official or an appointed official or someone who worked for an elected or appointed official, I think he just doesn't want to go to those things. I think he goes through the motions because he's enough of a politician to know that he must. But then to be late to everything, it is disrespectful. But it is because he really doesn't want, he hates that part of the job.
He did. I mean, he said that. He said, I wasn't elected to go to parades. He said something almost exactly like that. So not that mass is by any means a parade, but it was part of that whole festivities that I probably didn't want to have anything to do with it.
You know, if you're late to a parade, I mean, it is disrespectful, but it's a parade.
Yeah.
But when you're late to a commemoration of they ring the bell at 9:31 to recognize the victims of the plane crash, you can't get there at 9:45.
No.
You know, you got to be there. You know, and it's too bad. And if he doesn't want to do that, then, you know, don't run next time. I mean, that's the solution to it. I still don't know whether he's a good mayor or not. I have suspended, even here we are in a new season. Spring starts, allegedly, technically,
right.
Today at 6-something p.m. So it's a new season, so I can assess how I feel about him. This is this would be his second spring in office. And I just don't know yet. I don't know whether... I don't even know whether I like him. I know I like his family. And I like that his kid, Dante, just won this debate club contest. I like that. Because a kid can't win that without a good parent. No child can stand alone to triumph in that kind of hostile environment, that hyper-competitive environment. You really need your family to back you. So maybe he's late because he's being a good dad, but he's got to pick a lane. And I don't know. And Mr. Mayor, just like to the president, they should come on this show instead of going on places where you just get stroked. You know, I don't even know where he appears in any kind of regular basis, or even if he does.
He doesn't, no.
He doesn't. You know, let people talk to you. Let people ask you, even though it's a city of 8.4, 8.5 million people right now, you know, you've got to have some kind of input with the constituents. Otherwise, you're just going to be talking to other career politicians. You just stroke each other, scratch each other's back, and talk about how you're going to make money, raise money. 866 Geraldo, James from Brooklyn's on the line. Thank you for stopping my rant, James. What's up?
Yes, I think that the only hope for the Palestinians is to ask Pope Francis to intervene. People don't realize because the American media keeps it quiet, but 2 years ago, Pope Benedict, before he left, he recognized Palestine as a city-state nation. And I'm surprised that the American media doesn't want the world to know that the biggest church in the world has given full support to the Palestinian state cause. And for Israel to, for Bibi to come to America and speak to Congress and tell a lie, and his lie was the lie of omission. He never told the American people when he was here about a month ago that he planned on killing any Palestinian state. And another point I want to make real quick, what Bibi is doing, meddling with Congress, is it's a strategy of divide and conquer. He's manipulating the Constitution of America. He's going to one branch of government that traditionally has no say in foreign policy, and it's a divide and conquer position. And the American people need to realize one more thing, that America, the United States, is a nation of 340 million people. Israel is a nation of barely 8 million people, and the American media is putting Israel on par with the United States, which is a superpower with 340 million people, and this little tiny country, Israel, is causing all this drama, intrigue, and for all these politicians to run to Israel's aid, it has to do with the very wealthy American Jews. American Jews give more money to Congress than any other religious group in America, any other ethnic group. They flood the American body politic with money. So that's why this little small country is so powerful.
Well, I disagree. Country. I mean, I yes, there is. James, thank you for the call. Thoughtful and just on the verge of going a sentence too far. And there is no doubt but that the clout, Israel's clout, has some relation to the donations that the politicians receive. But there is also, and much more importantly, the sacred duty of this, the world's colossus, to ensure that there is a safe haven for the Jews of the world, given historically what has been the shameful record of the human race when it comes to the Jewish people. That's why I would annex Israel and make it the 51st state. So that you can't have an attack on Israel without an attack on the United States. Just make it absolute. It's not a question of who's president or who's prime minister. That bond to defend one another. And I was thinking about Israel and then, you know, the call just now, they're kind of harsh on Israel. I bet the Israeli army could take France. And so I think they could take England.
You put your money on Israel.
I would. I would put my money on Israel almost to the exclusion. It's the most powerful country south of Turkey for 3,000 miles in either direction. Until you get to China and until you get to the United States, I think Israel's probably, well, and Russia, of course. That's what Israel's up with those guys, the big time players. And there's no way that anybody can mess with the existence of Israel. It's not about the existence of Israel. It's the existence of a state that is I want to hasten to add, I think Netanyahu's on the right. I know that my friends who are Bibi supporters hate that Bibi wants to have Israel declared the homeland of the Jewish people. Why? Because they have this myth of secularism. That was, I think, exposed by Bibi's campaign about the Arab droves voting. But they have this myth that they don't want to puncture that Israel is a representative democracy. It is a representative democracy to citizens, but it doesn't speak to the people who are occupied. But that's another story. I think that Israel should be known in the same way that Iraq is the Islamic Republic of Iraq and Afghanistan, the Islamic this or that. Let Israel be the Jewish homeland for the Jewish people, recognized as such by the United Nations. I'm all for that because that's what it is and that's what it should be. And I'm all for a sanctuary and I'm all for protecting it to the last drop of blood I have. I'm just for a nation that plays fairly with all its ethnic groups and recognizes that it just can't keep territory that it conquered in a war in 1967, a six-day war in 1967. It's just, I want to get over there, get past that. I lament this relationship between Obama and Netanyahu. It's so unfortunate, so counterproductive. Judy wants to help me out in Brooklyn. Hi, honey.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, you know what? I'm very proud of you with the Willowbrook thing. But as far as this thing, you know what, Harold? I really feel you're just not a realist. You're just not a realist. That's what it is. You have a good heart, but you're not a realist. And I'm just, you know, I'm not a politician.
I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe I am hopelessly idealistic. Maybe I am.
But, you know, it's very important to be real. It's very important to be realistic. You have to know when it's raining or when someone's, like, you know, tinkling on you. I want to tell you something. I'm not a... Yeah, well, it's true.
What a vivid, vivid metaphor there, but you're right.
Listen, I'm not a politician. I want peace and harmony for everyone. I am 100% sure that every Israeli citizen in Israel wants peace and harmony for everybody. And unfortunately, John is right. And you know something? If you looked at the editorial page on Thursday, this past Thursday, Daily News, did you read it, Geraldo?
I was in Florida.
Oh, wow. The Truth About Bibi, it's a very supportive article, and it basically says that today the climate is different. They are surrounded by the Revolutionary Guards from Iran in, forgot where, Golan Heights. They're surrounded this way, that way, from every angle. Okay, they're all setting themselves up. It is like suicidal right now to even give an inch right now because of the crazy climate all the way around. You can't even, one Arab can't control the other Arab.
I don't think the situation now is any more dangerous than it has been at any time in the last 40 or 50 years in the old days,
yes,
Judy. But I appreciate your loving call. I do, and you're such a smart person.
Geraldo, hello?
Yes, honey.
Oh, I want to say one more thing.
Okay, hurry. Please.
Okay, so the one more thing. I told Marty, a diamond has 64 facets. And for me to pick and choose what I want to say is like crazy. I have so much to say. But you know what? I want to tell you something.
Go ahead.
Do you know about, I read an article about someone, a Muslim boy, who found out that from the maternal side, his grandmother was Jewish. And he converted. And he wrote a whole article. And in the mosque, talk about that Lebanon man, the Arab man who called you. In the mosque, he was saying how like a few hundred people were sitting there and praying, and the imam was talking about killing the Jews and it's in the Quran. So if you have this kind of, you know, rhetoric from imam, and these people are sitting in the mosque, and they're cheering away, I mean, this is a crazy mentality.
Okay, but let me just ask you this. Do you think, Judy, do you think, and I don't even have time to get your answer, has Israel's stance vis-a-vis Palestine and the Palestinians, has that had any effect on how Muslims view Israel?
I think that they are very religious.
Or do you think it's all about the Quran?
Yeah, but I hate to tell you, if the imam is saying it, this boy is quoting it. He was in the mosque. He converted, by the way.
I know you told me. Judy, I got to let you go, sweetheart, but I appreciate the call. And ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. You're listening to 77 WABC. Geraldo here along with Noam Layden. We're back, and we'll be here for your calls after this.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
I'm going to take calls right now, 866-GERALDO. I just want to give you a heads up. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to do a little detour. Interestingly, both Esquire and Cosmopolitan magazine this month feature surveys in their April issues, just out right now on the newsstands now. They feature surveys on sex, and it's interesting. They ask a lot of very provocative questions, but ordinary questions. I'll just give you one. I'm going to get to your calls, I promise, about the serious topic, but I think sex is serious too. Now, if you make out at a bar during a first or second date and then go home together, does that mean you're having sex?
No.
No?
No way.
64% of men say yes, and 50% of women say yes.
Oh, I thought you meant, I understood the question wrong. So, in other words, if you're making out, your chance of getting action
no,
is
50%. If you make out at a bar during a first or second date and then go home together, does that mean you're having
sex?
Oh,
yeah. No, I'd be, absolutely, you are. Yeah.
You are.
Yeah, totally.
I was wondering what the hell you were thinking about.
I misunderstood the question.
They used to say that about dinner, but they don't say that about dinner anymore. But, I mean, it's just making out. You're at a bar, you're making
out. Yeah, oh yeah, and you go home.
All right, enough about that.
You're scoring.
Forget I brought that up. I didn't mean to get that deeply into it because I wanted you to stay serious. Stay serious for a couple of minutes here. Here is, let's say, Jeff. Jeff in Freehold. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Geraldo. I've been following you forever.
Thank you.
Now, you know, we must not forget our history. In 1948, the State of Israel was formed. And immediately, almost a million Jews from Arabic countries overnight were kicked out. Their businesses in Egypt, thousands of years, hundreds and hundreds of years of Jews that lived there. In Iran, thousands and thousands of Jews overnight were kicked out of their countries. lost
Yemen, Morocco. We get it. Absolutely.
Okay. Secondly, the hatred of Jews from the Middle East goes, you know, years before the Holocaust.
I agree.
The '30s, the Grand Mufti.
Forget the '30s. You go back to the to the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in the 15th century. It goes way back. You could trace anti-Semitism as long as there have been Christians. Pagans were anti-Semites.
You comment on the last caller. It was a thoughtful call. I mean, it doesn't tell you. This is one Jew that's not rich, but I'm a proud conservative. And I love your work. I love the show.
Thank you.
And I love to talk. Thank you.
Okay. I don't know if you've ever called before. Don't be a stranger. Hi, Dave in Connecticut. What's up?
Okay.
First of all, is it snowing?
Really
snowing first. Weather report first.
Question.
Weather report first. Give me a weather report.
Nothing yet here in Connecticut. No,
okay.
No,
all right. Now you're on.
Okay. Listen, given the fact that the Palestine Liberation Organization was formed years before Israel took control of the territories in question.
I don't think that's true.
It was
1960s.
No, 1964, Geraldo. Look it up.
Okay.
So my question to you is, what land were they trying to liberate?
That's what I don't know. That's why I don't know that to be a fact. I don't know.
And the other question is, real quick, how can Israel possibly make peace with people who are at war with each other? I don't understand that.
All right. I mean, there's always something. It's a messy neighborhood. Here's Bill in Brooklyn. What's up, Bill?
Hey, Earl. Now, let's call the man before that woman. I'm surprised you didn't jump all over him. There's a lot of anti.
It was close. He was close. I was about to, but he didn't quite get over he got close to the line. I told him he got close, but.
Yeah, but that's how it starts. It's an undertone. You know, they're against overachievers. When I was in New York High School in the late 50s, the Jewish kids were the kids at the top of the class. They were now the Asians are the new Jews.
That's true. You'll see anti-Asian sentiment. I think that you got something there, Bill, for sure. All right, I got to let you go, buddy. I'm out of time for the segment. But, okay, when we come back, I want to do sex. And then I'll swing back to the topic du jour. And if you and your calling, particularly those who are west of us, when you see snow, let us know.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Right, said Fred, the one-hit wonder. I didn't hear the riff, though. What are they saying?
I'm too sexy for this shirt. You could sing that song, actually, from
all
the selfies you've
done. That's right. Actually, one of our guests from Cosmo coming up now, I told you we're going to do the sex survey. In The Apprentice, in Celebrity Apprentice, one of the tasks was to design a spread for Cosmo. And that's where I came up with the idea of the selfie, what was it? Love your selfie naked.
Right.
They love it. We won that.
Shocking that came from you. Yeah.
And shocking that actually the title was Terrell Owens. I came up with the idea, but Cosmo liked it. We won that task. And one of our guests now, Leslie Yazel, executive editor at Cosmo. Hi, Leslie.
How are you, Geraldo?
Now, do you guys usually team up with Esquire? I didn't know. This is the first from, or is this, because I want to welcome Rich Dorman, also the senior editor at Esquire. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Geraldo. How are you doing?
Good. So Leslie, is this a unique combo, or is it just coincidence that these two big publications, both Hearst publications, are doing sex surveys?
We decided to team up, and it's unprecedented. We haven't done it before. But we started talking about how men and women just don't communicate as well as we could have. Cosmo readers are always saying, like, what does it mean when he texts me and says, what up? And I think on the Esquire side, they're like, women, mysterious, help.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I have a connection with Esquire also. I think I broke the record for most consecutive years being on the annual Dubious Achievement Awards. So I've always had a fondness for Esquire. Okay, let's go through some of the questions. Sex and Americas is what Esquire calls theirs. And I don't know what the formal title of Cosmo is. What's your formal title, Leslie?
No, I think we went with the same thing.
Sex and America. Okay. Oh, good. It's the Esquire Cosmopolitan Survey of Men and Women. Okay. If you're over 18, how soon after meeting someone new is it appropriate to have sex? Women, 7% of women say date 1, 2, or 3. 18% of men say date 1, 2, or 3. So, Leslie, I guess the first answer is, are men more forward, just generally speaking, or more sexually oriented than women, more than twice as much?
Well, I mean, they're definitely more hopeful. They're hoping to score, and I think the women may not be quite in the same thing. But there were some similarities on when to have sex. It wasn't too
far. Here's one similarity. You're both drunk. You agree to have sex, and one of you regrets it the next day. Did a sexual assault occur? Now, Rich, 85% of men said no, and 80% of women also said no. So, the next day regret doesn't change the character of the encounter, eh, Rich?
Well, I think that's right, and I think that's one of the instances where we saw a lot of similarities between how men and women are thinking about issues of sex and sexual behavior. Just getting back to your previous point, when we ask them whether or not it's reasonable to assume after like a successful first or second date that if a woman invites a man over to her house, they're going to have sex, 59% of women men said yes, 53% of women also said yes. So there's a lot of overlap there as far as what their expectations are.
Now, it says only one of you is drunk. You both expressed interest when you were sober. Was that rape? 38% of women say yes. 27% of men say yes. So those are substantial numbers, both male and female, Leslie. So it's, I guess the problem is, and I put this in the context of a campus, I mean, as a dad with college-age girls, I'm very concerned about this. Drinking, the relationship between drinking, sex, and consent. I mean, you guys must have, Leslie, really probed that.
But it's a huge issue that we talk about all the time and that our readers are really interested in because there is a lot of drinking on campus, and there's a lot of sex on campus, and those two things can be complicated. And that's one reason we wanted to do the survey, was to talk about sort of people's expectations, to be able to get inside each other's heads. There's a big yes means yes movement in California on campuses. Instead of telling someone no, you don't want to have sex, you have to say yes and consent to sex and all the things that lead up to sex.
I mean, does a consent take the form of a written form? I mean, what happens?
No, I think, we talked to women who were experiencing this, and they said, actually, it can be kind of sexy talk. It's like, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? And she's like, yes, yes, maybe no.
So, Rich, what was your biggest surprise?
My biggest surprise in this is how much men and women agree on as far as when it comes to what is appropriate sexual behavior, what, the value of old school chivalry, sexual harassment, things like that. But what I think is most interesting are the differences in perception. That even though we can all agree what it means to sexually harass someone, women are seeing it and experiencing it much more frequently than men. Similarly, we all understand what constitutes certain acts of sexual violence, but women are much more likely to say it's an extremely serious problem than men in this country. So you have this sense of men and women not necessarily living in the same world and seeing it the same way.
Now, is it, Leslie, here's the question. Has conduct changed, or is it really how people feel about, for instance, drinking and sex and charges for sexual assault? I mean, have we changed from the old days?
I think we've definitely changed. I mean, I think that people are more aware that sexual assault is a problem. I don't know if you looked at our statistic about men and women saying that under some circumstances, could this man commit an act of rape? And it was surprising how many people said
52% of men believe that under the right circumstances, most men are capable of rape. 48% of women agree. Those are high numbers.
It is high numbers. And I think on the women's side, there's just more awareness that a rapist is not some cartoon villain stranger. A rapist could be a guy you know on campus. It could be someone you go out to drinks with after work. I think women have a much greater awareness. And I was happy to see that sort of men realize, what the stakes are here.
But the thing is, it's not about, I mean, sex has become so serious suddenly because of this rape and sexual assault stuff. It just, you know, where's the fun of it?
Well, there's still a lot of fun out there, I think. And we did look at some of the sort of lighter sides of dating and mating. And, you know, you guys were talking about naked selfies earlier, and you saw that that's something that's really popular now with both men and women.
Taking naked selfies and sharing.
Yes, and 7% of men say they forward them, so women aware.
So I'm not alone. So in terms of believing the victim, that's not a kind of a downer side, but it's important. If you accuse someone of rape, do you think you would be believed? Women say 80% of women say yes, they would be believed. I mean, that's good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that women are supporting women on this. They, you know, there's a belief out there that women are making up these claims or they were asking for it. And I think women are supporting other women and saying if a woman comes forward, she's coming forward for a reason.
Right. Okay. So nearly a third of dudes now, Rich, say they are feminists.
That's right.
51% of women say yes. Let me see. 60% of men have received naked pictures. 7% of men said that they forward the pictures. 1% of women forward the pictures. So, I mean, do you preach caution in Cosmo, Leslie, about selfies?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we do say, like, let's just look at the reality. If you forward this, there is a chance that it could just be out there. I mean, we spoke with Gabrielle Union, who's, you know, naked photos that she had sent to her husband within the, you know, within a relationship were leaked and hacked. And so, you know, through that story, we definitely sent the message that, like, you know, think before you do it. But we know that our readers do it and they have fun with it. And that most of the time, it's just a fun flirting foreplay kind of thing.
That's Leslie Yazell. We appreciate her from Cosmo Magazine. Their April issue is on the newsstands now. Rich Dorman, senior editor at Esquire. Before I let you go, who should make the first move during sex? Who cares? 93% of women, 88% of men. So the old rules don't apply about the guys should make the first move. Now it's a who cares.
Nope. It's a new world, Geraldo.
I got to catch up. Okay. Your edition, Esquire, hits the newsstands on the 24th. Of the month.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome back, everybody. 54 minutes after 11, I've got some important announcements. Number one, I'm delighted to relay the information that the White House has confirmed that they are consulting with the former General David Petraeus on advice on how to deal with ISIS. So they've taken my advice on that. More urgently, tonight I will appear in the Glee finale on Fox News. Fox News on Fox Channel 5 at 9 o'clock. It's hilarious. It's the finale. I'm honored to be on board. So it's tonight. Don't miss it. You'll be talking about it in the water cooler. And then my final announcement is that on Saturday and Sunday, the special I've been working on about the condemned killer Scott Peterson, the guy who killed his 8-month pregnant wife, Lacey, is on. I've got a lot of exclusive interviews there, including one with Amber Fry, Scott Peterson's mistress, who really is the one who brought the wrath of justice down on this fertilizer salesman whose alibi stunk as bad as his profession. So Scott Peterson, 10 years on death row. He's been condemned 10 years to this day. So it's a great special. A lot to say, but that's on Saturday and Sunday on the Fox News Channel. So Glee tonight, Scott Peterson, Saturday and Sunday on the Fox News Channel. Guns is here. Gunselman, first day of the second day of the big tournament. A lot of surprises.
Yeah, the madness is clearly upon us yesterday. I mean, you had 5 games that were decided by 1 point. You had a game go into overtime by 1 point. You had a game decided by a goaltending call. I don't even know what is goaltending. How do you call goaltending anymore? That never gets called. But yeah, you had buzzer beaters. You had everything. You had 2 number 3 teams upset by a number 14 seed. So that meant rip up your brackets already. It's, you know, half the country's already out of their brackets already.
All right, so in that regard, with all the billions being bet, has everyone lost their money already?
It seems that way. It seems a lot of people have.
So the bookies are collecting, and now people have to rebet.
Yeah, to try and make up for the losses that they already have after the first game. So there's 16 more games today, and the chaos is upon us.
When does St. John's play?
St. John's plays tonight, 9:40.
Against?
So, I'm not sure against who they are, but they're number 8 versus number 9 up and.
Okay, so they've got a shot. And one more, New York team. Manhattan, was it?
Oh, yeah, they're out.
They're out already?
Yeah.
Who'd they lose to? Somebody great, right?
It was a play-in game. I don't remember.
By the
way, your Glee thing, it's the series finale. You said the season finale. It's the series finale.
That's the last Glee ever. Mm-hmm. The last Glee ever. Oh, crap. Guns, thanks.
Yes, sir.